Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No. Take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No. Take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome to Whole Truth, the podcast by me, Jordan Stevens. And I'm joined by, that was quite a stat, it was quite like a, it was a jagged beginning.
Yeah.
It was edgy.
Oh, in a good way.
Yeah. So the voice you can hear, this is, I'm joined by Beth McColl, author and writer of words.
Writer, doer of words, maker of.
Doer of words.
Doer of, what do words?
So one thing I think we had to point out from the start, which we can establish quite quickly, is that both of us maybe have ADHD.
Yeah.
Which we've. From the 10 to 15 minutes before this started, we realised that we were kind of setting each other off.
Yeah, so. This might go. I think it's true.
I think it's true.
It happens to me a lot. I also have a tic disorder. I have Tourette's as well, which is
do
why
you?
I can't medicate it. And
is that why you do the right eye twitch?
Yeah, the right eye twitch. And that's me,
I love
like
twitches.
And when I, in public, I've been on the bus with someone else who has it, and we were just setting each other off in a way that was just.
Oh my God.
It was quite funny, it's but I was thing, like, we it? Have to be separated.
Do you think it goes for that goes for a lot of like mental health?
I think so.
Nearly everyone.
With these like neurodevelopmental things, I think people really...
I can see people with like particular forms of anxiety joining.
Oh, yeah.
But do they make it worse though? Yeah.
I do, yeah.
That's
but
so wild.
We'll see how it goes.
So like what? How extreme does your Tourette's get? Is it like the one... What would the word be? Is it like... Are people's idea of what Tourette's is?
Cause I, know no, it comes I mean, not really. Forms, so
you know, when people think of it as like, I'm going to say the worst thing ever to
so
you.
So that's like, there's coprolalia, which is the uncontrolled swearing. And I think that's 1 in 10 sufferers. So it's really rare to have that. Most vocal tics will be repeating words or kind of clearing your throat. There's also something called coprophilia, which is like a disgusting thing. And I kept getting those words confused.
Coprophilia?
Yeah. It's to do
like,
with like...
feel.
It's way worse than that.
What do you mean?
It's coprophilia. I think it's when you have like a sexual thing about shit.
Oh,
yeah, and then the really similar words. So I have to be really careful. And I'm like, yeah, I've had, you know,
coprolalia
in the past. No, that's just...
Uh-huh. So you've accidentally said to people
that I've had that in the past.
That you do have weird obsession
with
shit.
Have you got that? Yeah, so you have to be quite careful with
that's
that one.
That's funny.
Every day you learn some more.
So what Tourette's do you have?
So I've got, you see the facial tic,
yeah,
the
motors called?
And motor tic.
A motor tic.
Motor tic, and then there's vocal tic. So I used to just kind of clear my throat, which is way better now in my 20s.
Uh-huh.
As you kind of get older, they normally do level off quite well.
Would you consider Tourette's to be one of your monsters?
I would think so. I mean, it's more just the way I dealt with it. I felt a lot of shame about it and I really wanted it to go away. Whereas now I feel pretty all right about it.
Okay, so what I want to do is I want to split this up because there is some kind of structure to this podcast, I think. I'm not sure. But like,
I'll
also
do my best to...
the structural piece of paper that was usually here for me, let alone me and you, isn't here. So I'm going to have to just try and, I don't know, it's cool. I can kind of remember it. I've done about 24 of these, so I should know. Firstly, I want to ask you how you're feeling today.
I feel good today. Yeah, I've...
Out of 25?
21 and a half, I think. I feel really, really good.
That's like in his 80 percentile.
Yeah, I had like a really rough time maybe about 2-3 weeks ago because I realised I hadn't been taking my meds properly. And then I started taking my meds properly. And
which
like,
meds?
So I'm on Lexapro, Escitalopram, 20 milligrams
of that. Is that antidepressant?
Antidepressant. Ah. It's an SSRI, I think.
Those are really hard to come on and off.
Yeah, and really bad. I was in, like, you get physical withdrawals, you feel like absolutely shit. I just wasn't being, like, with the ADHD, I forget to take them. I don't know if I've taken them. It could be like 4 days.
I'm not sure they help with
ADHD. And I hadn't, no. They don't, but it just means that it's harder for me to remember in the first place.
And you can't take ADHD medication as well as?
The doctor was like, yeah, there's all kinds of, what is it called? They interactions.
Yeah.
And I've had that in the past, not with ADHD medication.
They cross wires.
And it's been an absolute disaster.
So you recovered from that?
Yeah, I feel good now. Just really? Like a few weeks of taking them properly and I feel fine.
So you just missed a couple of...
Yeah, it was really stupid. Mate. And I was like, why do I feel so bad?
It's like Jenga, isn't it?
And I feel, yes, I feel good now.
All right, great. So you've written a book called How to Come Alive Again.
Yes.
A Guide to Killing Your Monsters. Could you please... I'll put that there.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It's a beautiful book. And it is... available.
It is available to buy. It's in Waterstones, in Foyles, a lot of like little local bookshops.
Support local bookshops.
Do you have it? I might ask on my Twitter, like, if you stock it, tell me and I'll funnel people in.
Okay.
Because people want to buy it. People are like, how do I buy it in the best possible way?
So you've written this book. You have a book published at the age of 25. You're 26 now.
26 now.
You were wrote it when 24.
Yeah.
Maybe even 23.
I think I started writing when I was... 23, I think it was 2017 I had that meeting, but I'd already written.
And then boom, 20, that is a massive achievement. So can you please explain to me a little bit about how you begun to your relationship with writing, what drove you to write the book, and how the fuck you finished it?
Yeah, it's all been good, but it's hard work. So
Where did it start?
So I have always, I'd written about like mental health since I left uni as like a job.
Right.
But that was just articles, like 1,000 words. Bam.
For uni papers and then?
I mean, this is after uni. At uni, I was, you know, I liked writing a lot. I did English literature.
Yeah.
So I always loved writing. And that's always, I think...
Why?
Just nice to do. It makes me feel good.
But why?
It's just, I've never been I like being a creative person, but I've never been a performer.
Right.
Like, I don't really... Being in front of people and it doesn't kind of energise me. Whereas writing something, I think, well, that's really... That feels finished. That feels good.
Yeah.
Energizes me. It's kind of a real.
It gives you an energy.
Yeah, it's my that's my outlet.
The idea of completion gives you energy.
Yeah, I love that. I love kind of feel like I put those words in the right order.
What if you don't like the order?
Well, then you start again, or you do your best.
And that comes naturally.
It's better to write something, even if it's total shit, than to write nothing.
It really is. That's hard though for some people.
But
you know?
I liked it, so I always like writing.
That's great. So you have a general, you have like a natural ability to redraft and complete.
Yeah, I love that. I love kind of messing around with words and.
Seeing and putting them,
yeah, just being like this feels right.
I like that.
So I was always writing, you know, papers, and I did a lot of creative writing at uni,
little stories,
which was good. So I did a lot of short stories. I did my dissertation was like a 6,000-word story, which
really?
Feels like I was cheating, but I was like, I'm definitely doing that.
That's brilliant.
Rather than like a proper.
Was it a sci-fi?
It was like, yeah, kind of future.
Don't lie.
It was.
Is it?
Yeah, it was kind of like set in the future and like it's this lesbian couple and it was someone's, you know, they're totally. Like the mob was there. I don't remember
it. The
exactly.
mob was there.
Yeah, some kind
of
like.
Oh my God, this sounds like a future.
Future desert mob.
This is at least a Netflix series.
And I really enjoyed that. But it, you know, someone had to come and say, do you want to write a book? For me to be like, maybe I could write a book.
So why did they come and say that to you?
Well, because I've been writing for maybe 2 years and my work was out there and I was tweeting to an audience of maybe like 50,000 people.
50,000?
That, I think, yeah, by the time the book came out, it was about 50,000.
How did you get to that?
So now it's about 100,000.
How?
Just tweeting, people were like, this is quite funny.
Just off Twitter?
Yeah. The whole thing, this book would not, it was Twitter.
Oh,
Twitter
just,
got me
just
my work, it got
those
this.
Tweets.
I was killing those tweets.
140 word murder.
That was it, yeah. And now it's 280. But at the time, when I like was coming up on Twitter, it was 140. And people were like, okay, we'd take a chance that you can write an article.
Was it like, what kind of vibe? Like opinionated?
Mostly
very
it was
honest.
Jokes. So I was just writing jokes, really silly jokes. And to like, I think when I was left uni, I had about 10,000 followers. And it was really,
just
it was nice. It was a nice community. And it was just jokes. It was also like jokes about being a woman and jokes about being mentally ill as well. Like a lot were like... funny takes on the fact that I was depressed and anxious. So that's where when people are like, oh, maybe you want to write
about this,
write about, you know, having depression and having anxiety.
The power
and
of it,
they fed each other, so I'd get more work from the article.
Did you get like Twitter cosigns from like authors and stuff?
Yeah, some like a few famous authors have blocked me, which is quite like Joyce Carol Oates has blocked me on.
Blocked you?
Blocked me. But then you get like you talk as a really
why?
I don't remember. So I definitely pissed her off. But you do, you like people, you're kind of more visible to like people that you...
Hilarious.
Like me and Piers Morgan have like a running...
Oh, fuck Piers Morgan. Like, what a
knobhead. Like I invited him, there was like an MTV show that was like Meet Your Online Rivals. And I was like, come on then, Piers Morgan. He was like, I'm ready when you are.
You applied, great. Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of back and forth with Piers Morgan.
He's an awful man, but yeah, so that's what I do online. And that was like the real kind of catalyst for getting jobs. And then the jobs, I had a few meetings at publishers, and then Unbound got in touch and immediately just felt really good about it.
Mm.
Like Unbound, I love Unbound. Like I'd read a few of their books. Like I had like, what is it? The Good Immigrant, which I thought was amazing. And they've done so many great books. And I was just like, yes, if you want to do a book with me, I will absolutely.
Right. Wow, that's great. So what? So was this idea something that you were like, right, I'm ready to write this? Or did you have to sit down with yourself and think, were you particularly struggling at the point of contact?
I mean, possibly. At this point, like I had, when I went to Unbound, like I had this document that I'd started writing, which was, I mean, the bones of this book. And I, at the time, I didn't think of it as a book. I was like, oh, this is a really long like blog post.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, I kept building and building and it was like, you know, 40,000 words. I was like, oh, this might actually be a book. And I sent it over to them and they were like, yeah, you structure a book around this. This is, you know, this will work because it's such short paragraphs and we reordered them and we did this and this and then added to it. And it was already there. Like I'd like accidentally written most of the book without, I'd like tripped myself.
It's pretty amazing. Did you ever feel like, did you ever battle with like imposter syndrome?
Oh yeah.
Like I always feel like, how would I know?
All the time. And like I luckily had a lot of people to talk to where I could be like, you know, bounce my ideas off. But once I decided to do the book, it was kind of out of my hands. I was like, well, I've got to do it now. I've signed a contract. Uh-huh. But before that, if someone was like, finish the book and then we'll see. There's no way I would have finished the book.
Really?
No. I had to have that structure of someone saying, right, we want this by March. We want this. And so you just kind of do the work.
Yeah.
Which is good. I need that deadline.
So how long did it take you?
I reckon it probably took a year and then edits.
Words. Love that.
Yeah. Because well I could done. Sit there and write. Some days I'd write 2,000 words. I gave myself a minimum of like 500 a day.
And you never screwed with that?
No. And I wasn't doing a lot of other writing at the time though. Like,
yeah,
but
I've you never write 2,000 and think, oh, I'm just going to chill for a couple of days.
I quite liked it. It was like,
it is fun.
And it was
isn't
like
it?
At the time I was
to
working.
To have a goal, have purpose.
Yeah, I was working in a shop and then I was working as a nanny.
Which shop?
Oh, it's just a little card and gift shop back in.
Which do you prefer, the shop or the nanny?
The nannying. Like,
really?
I like the nannying.
Are you saying that because she might be listening, the mum?
No, shit. No, they're great. But it's nice.
No,
the
they
kids
definitely
were
won't be listening.
Cut all ties. No. I like that. Yeah, it's nice to kind of be busy. And in the shop, I was just in this room, like doing laps.
Cards and accessories.
Cards and gifts. So like.
But good pens.
I mean, it wasn't really a lot of stationery.
Really?
It was kind of like cards. Expensive gifts, like jewellery and like soaps that cost like £45.
Oh, fantastic.
And it was like yummy mummies would come in.
Oh, so you worked in West Hampstead?
I did not, but I think they, yeah.
All right, so what would you say has been your most difficult period of mental well-being in your life?
I think at university, definitely.
Really?
That was when I couldn't pretend anymore that it wasn't happening, which I'd been doing really successfully until I was at uni. I was about 18, 19. I had to confront it. And it was, I think I went to the doctor because my mood was really, really low. I'd been drinking a lot. First time term was great. And then suddenly it gets a bit real. You're living away from home.
First time like freshers.
Freshers, fantastic. And then you know, you come back in the new year and you think, oh, I'm here for the next few years.
I feel like I missed out.
I have a lot of regrets associated. Yeah, so I was lucky I met some great people, but I mean, for the third year, I spent most of the time in bed. Like, I would miss like 5 weeks of uni at a time.
Whoa.
Like, I missed out on like the first class degree just because I was too ill to like hand in my essays.
Oh,
so it sucks. So there's a lot of like regret, but also it was a time of real like reckoning. You know, it was the first time I went to the doctor and said, I think I'm really depressed. Yeah. And
well, like depressed, like suicidal.
I reckon at
or
that
depressed,
time
like,
I was just
how on earth do I feel happy ever again?
Yeah, it was that real. It was that period. It was like
melancholy,
4 weeks in. Yeah, when
melancholy.
You're just like walking around and you just feel like everything's so far away from
apathy.
You.
Oh, like disassociation.
Yeah,
thing.
I felt like, you know, I was in this like spaceman suit and nothing was coming close, and like
that's
everything
odd
was. Sort
that
of,
you say that as an image. I've heard that before.
Yeah, it's really like you're walking around in like a human body, but nothing is. It's like all the colours drained out of everything. And so I went to the doctor and I was like, all right, something is not right here.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of obviously seeing a lot of doctors. And before that, I was like, I was doing a good job of being in denial and learning all of these like really bad habits to, you know, present as a mentally well person, which I'm now unlearning like
right,
8 years
course.
Later.
You know, I was thinking about, I was trying to write something about this today actually. Mm. And I was thinking about when I was a kid, my whenever my mum would ask me to tidy my room, I would just shove all my clothes into little crevices.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then when someone would look, it looked like it was tidy.
Exactly.
And then I realised that that's probably an analogy for like a lot of my life.
Because when you put any pressure on it, think there's like an explosion of mess.
It's like I would never be able to find anything.
But I think that's perfect, you know.
But then of course the painstaking folding of things, it's looking after your future self, isn't
it? Yeah, storage solutions that make sense, but mentally.
Self-storage,
yes, which you have to do over, and like that's like, I feel like it's my hobby now. Like I've got to learn how to be a
store
person.
Store myself. Ooh,
which
I quite
is,
like that.
Which
I see,
like
I see
that
a kind
that's
of quite profound
what
image.
I do, but like, it's like, oh, I'd rather be like, not have that and be like, doing like Zumba or like ceramics.
Why
but
you,
I spend most of
Zumba?
My time like trying to figure out my brain.
You can do Zumba as well.
I think Zumba would probably be quite good
I feel
for me,
like
actually.
I feel like you can remove that block.
Yeah, do Zumba.
Is there Zumba better. Nearby?
I feel like Zumba wherever you go.
I think you can do Zumba.
Yeah.
Whenever you want.
It takes a lot of effort, though, to be like a person. That I feel a bit tired for Zumba.
Yeah. Oh, you're too tired to do Zumba.
Yeah.
I think Zumba's one of those things, if we keep saying Zumba enough, you'll be able to do it.
Do you think that's... Maybe that is Zumba. Maybe Zumba's in the heart.
Okay, so Zumba's in the heart. So is there a route to all this? I mean, if you don't want to speak about anything...
Oh, my issues.
Totally cool.
My brain. I mean, I think...
No, just in terms of, like, often they talk about anxiety and depression or whatever else being an attempt to stop you from feeling something else.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know.
What is that thing? Nothing happened.
I don't think so. I mean, whenever I've gone to, like, a counsellor or a therapist, they always start in childhood and they're... I just think I'm a person who... I think I'm very, like, a very sensitive person, a person who... It will naturally pick up on
other people's stuff.
Yeah, little changes, and that feeds the anxiety. I mean, I'm understanding anxiety for the first time, not as like this internal battle of like my brain sabotaging me, but just as like this kind of leftover from evolution of like my brain trying to alert me to perceive danger, and so I'm like, oh, I am on my own side, but I'm just kind of getting a bit wrong.
That's interesting.
And so which is quite helpful to understand like the processes of depression and anxiety, but.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of things that have fed into it and made it better or worse as I've been growing up. But you seem to
remember having like a fun time primary, secondary school, whatever. Like.
Yeah, I think there's always. I was always maybe a little bit anxious as a kid, but it's too early to like, you know, pathologize. You can't expect, you know, my parents were like, oh, she's a bit shy, or she's, you know, it's only as an adult that kind of blossoms into something that
do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I've got two brothers and a sister. We're all, there's four of us, and my parents had four kids in 4 years.
Whoa.
Idiots. Yeah. Shaggers.
Yeah, wouldn't
idiots.
Stop.
Just absolutely couldn't stop.
I mean, were they all on purpose?
I was the only one that was on purpose.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You would have thought after the second and...
Well, they had twins to start with, and they were like, wow, these are... My brother and sister are so easy and so, like, easygoing. They were like, we'll have another one. 18 months later, they had me, and they were like, okay. Because I was a little tearaway. They were like, that's it, that's done. And then accidentally had another one.
Oh, and then another... So. Oh, so twins, right.
Twins.
Okay,
and
well, I can kind of get it with it being three times.
So there was 4 in 4 years. So all
you're the middle
close.
Child.
So I'm the middle child, which I think...
Is a thing?
Definitely is a thing, but...
I've heard people talk about it. I'm an only child, which is definitely a thing.
Yeah, oh yeah, that is a big one.
Yeah. But I'm very generous.
Oh, is that... You're not supposed to be?
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know anything about...
If you're an only child.
And it's like...
I'm like definitely have... I've had to battle through some quite severe social ineptitude.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't understand the concept of friendship until I was about 19.
Yeah.
just from like an objective... Like I get it now. I'm like, oh, it feels nice to be around other people.
Nice. Community is important.
Yeah, but before it'd be like, unless you're doing something that I felt as though actually propelled your life.
Right.
I didn't understand that. I only now do I get the concept of doing nothing. When I was like a teenager, if someone was like, what are you doing? Oh, we're going to go hang around at Thingy's house.
Yeah.
Do like, nothing.
What's the purpose of
be like,
that?
Are you watching a film? Like, if you're watching
what's
a film.
What's the objective? Yeah.
Literally be like,
how do I win?
What's the end goal?
yes.
For real. Okay, so what's been your best period of mental well-being?
I think currently I'm in a pretty good state.
Great.
I mean, between obviously there's like when I was a toddler, before you get like, object permanence and everything's all right.
Right.
This is probably the most.
I've never had anyone answer it with zero to six.
Yeah. 0 to 6
zero
nice.
To 6 months. That's actually amazing. What's your best period of mental well-being? I think just after birth.
Just after,
literally,
yeah.
Literally before my brain even was natural, aware.
And then you become self-aware and then it's just downhill.
Downhill.
But then now, yeah, I'm definitely feeling a lot better than I'm doing more work now when I have a bit more of a sense of myself and also I'm aware of how little I know and I feel all right about it.
Oh, that's great.
Like, 26, no one has any clue.
No one has any clue forever.
I mean, I'm sure, like, this is going to be hard until I'm in my 30s and then apparently everything gets a lot easier because you don't...
I've heard things get better and better until you're in your 70s.
Oh, yeah. 60,
or 60s and 70s. I've literally heard people every decade say to someone the decade younger, go, oh, wait till we get into this one. I mean, it's really...
Yeah, maybe not in the age of like climate crisis, but we're going to ignore that and pretend everything's going to get a lot better. I think you do. You think you feel happier and happier.
I can't even fathom the climate crisis, if I'm being honest with you. Me neither. I want it to stop.
I'd rather it did.
But I feel as though I have very little power. I mean, I do my... It's not like individual change.
It's not. It's
got to be big boy country.
Yeah, they're putting out like 9 companies responsible for this. I can have my plastic. No, I get rid of my plastic straws.
Yeah,
and I can recycle. But
do you know what I think is interesting about that? You know, when people say there's no planet B.
Yeah.
I thought, what if there was a planet B?
We'd wreck that as well.
It'd still be awful. Well, how would you get there?
Exactly.
I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, what does that mean? And also, how would we decide who gets to go to planet B?
It would be very...
That would be a real quick way of causing mass murder.
Yeah, I wouldn't definitely wouldn't be
the rich
to
people
go.
Would be hunted down.
Because I don't... Well, they would, because they've got no real skill set, though.
I know, but also they'd be have the most likelihood of...
Well, that... Because climate change is very racist, like...
Elon Musk would have to wear constant armour.
Always. I wish he would. Don't like that man either.
I don't know why he's not a vigilante like Batman. If I was that smart and that rich... I would literally be fighting for crime.
What does he do? He just tweets.
He tweets.
He's like a 47-year-old man who tweets like a teenager.
Yeah, but I mean, it's fair enough.
I'm always asking for money, and he'd never given me any. So.
Well, he invented PayPal, you know.
I think he said paper then, and I use PayPal all the time.
PayPal. Yeah. And that's why he's so rich.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but also he's a genius.
Yeah, he's a genius. He should have billions, but he should, you know.
Well, it's like probably Twitter is just like, I think the idea of, when you have that much power, like social interaction must be like the biggest drug of the world.
Well, sure, because everyone wants to be your friend.
So you're just saying things.
Saying things.
I actually don't follow
people.
Him on Twitter.
No, me neither.
Don't you?
No, I don't follow many like real celebrities. Like,
you follow robots?
I follow mostly bots.
Oh, right.
Russian bots.
So that's everyone then.
Exactly.
Am I right? Consumerism.
No, I don't really follow a lot of celebrities.
Okay, who's your favourite person to follow?
I've got a lot. I follow a lot of people who there's like an account that posts like, I think it's pictures of raccoons every day.
Really?
I think it's called like Everyday Raccoon. So I quite like that because it's really no nonsense. You know exactly what you're going to get.
Would you say that's contributing to your mental well-being?
Yes, absolutely. So much more than anything else I do.
I love that.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to just have a buzz in a day, just make sure you subscribe to
Everyday
Raccoon.
I recommend that people follow these accounts because they are really nice.
Really?
They do make you feel better. They're really uncomplicated. Yeah. I think it's called Everyday Raccoon. I mean, there's one for possums. There's one for... You know, little pigs and wellies. There's all kind of, like you can choose your poison on that. You don't have to have raccoons if you're not partial to them.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Think I'm in love with a singer, yeah, but I want to get richer. Life threw me a bag of lemons. No wonder I'm bitter. Have you done many interviews about this before?
I mean, I've done a few. I've done like a few in real life panel things, and then a couple
What I like about these podcasts is you have an opportunity now for your fan base, people who follow you to know a bit more about you.
Yeah.
The parts of you that you wouldn't necessarily... You know what? Another thing we do with the Whole Truth podcast is we talk about music.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
So, because, you know, music, How's that? What's your relationship been with music and mental health? Like, are there particular songs?
I love music. I think that's an important one.
But is there anything you can or can't listen to anymore?
Just a few songs I think that you just attach.
Relationships and that.
Yeah. But mostly, no, there's nothing. And I know that there's a lot of like kind of music therapies that people do. And I love music. Like,
what's your go-to to boost your spirit?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I think Toto. Toto's like just not Africa, not just like maybe some like deeper catalog Toto.
What's the one? Something about raining in Africa.
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah, not Toto. That one. Toto, yeah. Forget that one. There's Hold the Line, which I like a lot. I'm Rosanna.
I don't know.
Toto's kind of pumps me up.
Really?
I like Mitski a lot, but that's more of like a melancholy.
Melancholy's fine.
Like on the bus when it's raining, looking out the window.
Really? And you just catch a vibe. Yeah.
Like, I love music, but I mean, like, I've got no sense of like rhythm or I'm not a singer, I'm not a, but I just love listening to music.
You don't like dancing?
I love dancing. I'm not very good at it, though.
That doesn't matter. You don't have to be good at dancing. Yeah. Really? There's two questions as well that I ask on the podcast, which are pretty pointless, but they can sometimes lead to quite interesting conclusions. What's your favourite colour? Go.
A kind of mustard yellow.
Love that. Mm. That's a great colour.
I love mustard as well.
As a food?
As a food, like, just when I was little, me and my sister would go and get a little spoon of mustard. Dijon.
When you were little?
Yeah. I mean, still do it now.
You had an acquired taste for mustard pre-10.
Yeah, mustard and vinegar.
That's wild. Yeah. You know when you said before, you said nothing really happened to you as a child, and then...
No. Eating mustard and I reckon, drinking vinegar. Yeah. That might have had something to do with it. Oh, gosh.
When did you roughly start disassociating as a child? Well, me and my sisters, we used to take spoonfuls of mustard.
Wake up just absolutely covered in...
I'm sure you have to wait for your palate to, like, settle.
We liked it a lot.
I know what? I'm being ridiculous. You're right. Mustard is fine for
and
all
I
ages.
Just love that. I love that colour. I think it's a happy colour, but it's not smug about it. It's not kind of like...
It's almost
canary
Saharan.
Yellow. Yeah.
It's like almost golden sun.
Classy, I think.
But it's a bit more... Mm. Also, you can get away with it in like a suit, T-shirt.
That's it.
It is a great colour.
Yeah. My favourite.
That's brilliant. And what's your favourite shape?
Circle.
Yes, Dan.
Circle. I like them. I think it's an uncomplicated shape again. I think they just kind of roll around, don't get involved, kind of... It just seems like they don't get involved with the drama.
Yeah.
A circle.
Great.
Yeah. Big fan, like a circular table, no one's at the head.
Do you like a circular table?
I do if there's like a Lazy Susan type, like, and there's food going around it. I quite like that.
A Lazy Susan?
Lazy Susan, I really want a Lazy Susan.
What's a Lazy Susan?
It's like a thing that spins. I think you can get like a manual or automatic, just like so the food goes round. Lazy Susan.
Like Yo Sushi?
I mean, I kind of think that's kind of the Lazy Susan of the future.
Who has a Lazy Susan in their house?
I mean... Probably really rich people. I don't have one yet.
Oh, okay, cool. So you just want something that spins and people just take their bits off.
Yeah, you get the restaurants. I love that.
That's
I think
wild.
That's a great shape. You can't have that with... Is too many sharp corners involved with any other shape.
Is it literally electric powered?
I think you probably can get those. But I quite like a humble one that you have to rotate yourself.
Do you ever feel conscious about talking about... I mean, you've written a book about it.
Whole book, yeah. It's no going back.
You're not
now.
That conscious. Are you gonna? Do you feel the conversation around mental health has changed since you started writing it? Do you feel as though there's more of yourself to be dug up and thrown out?
Maybe. I mean, I've always tweeted about it. I've always been really, really honest about it. Like, I'll be like, I'm having a bad day. I don't want to get out of bed today, or like, I didn't get out of bed, or all of these things. Like, I've always been really open about that. And the internet is forever, so you know that was always out there. And so when it came to writing the book, not a lot of it I haven't talked about. Like, it's not super autobiographical. Like, I do, there's a few things in there about, like, I was like, there's your stories that, you know, my parents knew, but like people were like, oh, I didn't know that this had happened. But yeah, definitely, I think people will come to me and say, oh, I've read, people I'm at school with, like, oh, I read your book and I didn't know this, but oh, I've also been through this, which is really nice. People are really
open about relatability.
It. Yeah, I think people like when people are frank about these things. It's important.
It is, I think. I think honesty, living in your truth, is only real way to connect.
Yeah. And I know that people do. I love the push towards, like, oh, just talk about it.
But do you feel a pressure now you've written this?
A little bit.
To be constantly...
Yeah, a little bit. People are like, oh, what's new? Or like, what's going on? Or like, are you feeling depressed? And I feel like that always centres the conversation.
Great,
like how
next
I'm
book.
Mental, yeah. but I like it. I mean, it's... it just means I'm super comfortable asking other people about theirs. Like when I meet people and they're not mentally ill, I'm a bit like, what?
That doesn't exist, does it?
No, I can't. It can't do. And people are like, no, I don't have anything. I'm like, we definitely do.
I think there are some people who might have had a very emotionally bound childhood.
Yeah.
With reasonably secure parents.
That is it.
I mean, might feel okay.
A lot of people are really like kind of neurotypical and also really have got the skills that they need to manage their emotions, which is great.
Yeah, but normal, I think, is so subjective, you know?
Absolutely.
So are there things you do, is there things you do day to day to manage yourself? What are they?
So for me, routine's a big one because I can very quickly slip into something and like I won't notice that I've not been eating properly. I've kind of not. So I go to the gym or I go for a walk and I try and do things.
Movement.
Yeah, even in conjunction with antidepressants, they say that it makes them work like 10% better.
100%.
Just exercising. So that's the thing I really enjoy. Like I've reframed that as like, it used to be like, oh, I've got to go to the gym. That's a chore. And now I'm like, no, I like going to the gym. It's a thing that I do for myself.
Yeah.
Which is not, like, I don't do to lose weight because I want to be like stronger. It's just nice to go.
Yeah.
So that's important. I think routine, taking my meds on time.
At the same time?
Yeah, I try to.
Try to, yeah.
But so I just can't manage it. Because I don't have that like executive function where I'm like,
yeah, that's what ADHD is.
Yeah, complete lack of that. And I've got a like, I've tried alarms, I've tried like putting post-its everywhere saying, have you taken meds?
The executive functioning part of your brain, as someone said it to me the first time, I was like, this sounds like instantly my head became a boardroom.
Yes.
And I was like, someone's not doing their job.
All of it is chaos and there's paper everywhere.
Yeah. And it's like, why are you not working better? You know, how do you motivate our executive functioner?
Because it's weird. You say, like, I get like hyper focus. People with ADHD can't focus. And often it's that they can focus really well on stuff that they're interested in. Yeah. Whereas now I really have to engage.
I'm not interested in anything.
That's a problem. That'll get you.
I'm joking. There are some things.
But it's also, yeah, saying like, you've got to do what you've got to do, like you've got to go to work. But also
routine is important. It saves me from the what's the word? Clasps?
Clasp is like when you fasten things, like you could clasp something.
It saves me from the clasp of depression.
Yes,
before routine. I got a dog as well. And that helps with the walking.
That helps massively.
No, but it's walking.
Oh yeah, because you've got to get
the walking thing.
I love walking.
So routine is a big one.
You know, I'm quite flexible with it because I know some days I can do less and I will do less. Like I've always got permission. I'm like, look, if you want to stay in bed, so you can stay in bed for the day, but you're not doing it 2 days in a row. And it kind of gets
me up.
So
you set yourself the boundary.
Yeah, I'm like, look, if you want to, you can have an hour to wallow. But after that, you're getting up and you're, even on days when I don't feel like it, I can still do stuff. I don't have to love it. I just got to do it. Discipline somewhere. I don't have a lot of it, but
yeah,
I do have, I really.
What do you want to get ticked off in the next 10 years? I mean, you've already written a book.
Yeah, I mean.
What's the dream?
I reckon at some point I'd like to have some savings. People are like, oh, I want to buy a house. I would like to have some savings. Exactly.
That's not a thing. They can't exist. Yeah.
So it's mostly, I mean, career-wise, I'd like to...
You can do it.
To gradually build these. I'd like to be doing more, you know, I'd like to be, maybe write another book, maybe write a fiction book. You know, 10 years' time, I'll have a bit more life behind me so I can maybe write another non-fiction.
Yeah.
Because this, I feel like I could only write at this point because it was... You forget what it's like to be a really young person with... I feel like I wrote this back in time to my 16-year-old self.
Yeah.
And at 35, I'd have forgotten her. I wouldn't have known like how to talk to her. So this one I wrote at the right time, but next one, I don't.
You don't know yet.
I might write one about dating because I do a lot of that. And I'm not very good at it. But really? Also do it, like, I feel like I could.
Why not very good?
I'm not very good at it. I think I do a lot of it and I've got very little patience for nonsense.
Have you ever had your heart broken?
Oh yeah,
it hurts, right?
It hurts so bad.
That's something that I think is an interesting topic of conversation. Yeah. It actually was once, it did pop up once on this podcast, and I was really wanting to get more into that because relationships are a massive aspect of our well-being.
Because a big bit in the book that I wrote, like dating when you're dating with a mental illness, I think it's so, you navigate that so much differently. Depending on what, I think you metabolize pain when you're someone with depression or anxiety or any of these things. You metabolize pain in a way that really draws it out, and I found myself being really hard on myself, being like, "Well, this is because of this, because of the unique challenges."
You metabolize pain.
Yeah, just the way I kind of felt with it was just
How do you mean you metabolize it?
Like, just the way my brain and my body processed it. It felt like it went through me, like, very, very... I didn't deal with it very, very well.
Okay. It went straight through you, or it gets stuck?
It get kind of stuck, I feel like. You kind of take a long time over with, like, very sensitive
people.
Have you had,
like, one particular relationship?
I mean, I think
that,
like,
centerpiece, you know?
Bigger break. Oh, yeah. From, like, my longest relationship was 18 months. And when we broke up, it was... He was mentally ill, I was mentally ill. It was in a really, like, really bad, torturous, punishing way.
Oh, so it was, like, toxic the whole way through?
I mean, no, the relationship was great, but just the breakup and that last months were...
The worst.
It was bad. And we were, like, kind of living together, but, and, you know, having to move out and having to... It was bad.
That's
but
a
it's
lot.
So... it's. I mean, it's it does teach you a lot. It's so informative, annoyingly. You do learn.
And how do you... So you, since that point... It's the longest relationship, 18 months.
18 months... Yeah, I mean, I kind of love, and I think it's great, but I'm pretty happy on my own. I'm pretty happy to... I like dating a lot.
You self-regulate.
Yeah.
I do that.
So, you know, I think you learn how to be in a relationship and learn how to better attach yourself to people and, like, healthy attachments versus unhealthy attachments.
Yeah.
And I think you do a lot of that in therapy as well. Like, a therapist explains this to me and I'm like, oh, I didn't know that.
But I feel like all of this falls into the same... I think that also falls into the reasons as to why we end up being held back or why we have struggles with... Like, for example, I didn't necessarily have, like, any particularly big moments of, like, boof, this happened in your childhood. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, I didn't have, like, a major operation or something like that. But I was just brought up in a environment that can just cultivate particular... Like, there's this one guy called Gabor Mate. Do you know about him? Who works with child? I've mentioned his name loads, but he's like a child psychologist, and he talks about trauma. But, like, trauma isn't necessarily recognised apparently in a lot of spaces. And he says that ADHD, you're not born with ADHD. You're born with a propensity to get it.
And then
if you're put into a particular environment, it goes like boom.
Oh,
and then when it moves, and then in the rest of my life, if I think about situations that have, like, caused me anxiety at a young age, you know, it's just you find those situations again, and then you're having to like separate the two things from happening,
which is
why your body goes into some kind of, like, old response.
It's wild, isn't it? I mean,
it happens in the context of love, because, like, that's the reminder of
it activates
when you're a kid,
part of yourself. Yeah, it's all these, like, tests that they do about, like, attachment in children and where we get these things from, which I found so fascinating. Like, they do it with monkeys as well.
Oh, okay, hey, let me do a game with you.
Okay, go on then.
All right, you have to be real quick.
Okay.
What's your favourite animal?
A monkey. Oh, fuck.
Okay, give three. Why three things?
Because they're funny, quite human, and I think they're just from cartoons.
Do a different third one.
Oh, funny, what did I say? Funny. Like humans. They've got long arms. Quite like a long-armed creature.
Okay. Apparently, if you ask someone their favourite animal and their favourite three things, that's just, like, secretly what they look for in a partner.
Oh, God. Human-like, long arms.
I love that you said quite
funny.
Human. Yeah. That's, like, brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, that is... I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Those things are...
Boom.
True.
I asked my mum that once and she went, a giraffe. And I went, why? And she went, because they're so unusual and rare. And I was like, this is why you're single.
Yeah. big long neck, leaves.
Literally, it's, like, so wild and just, like, oh, it's so bizarre. It's like,
I'm going to be thinking about that. I'm going to be...
Just, like, rein it in a bit. I mean, go for, like, a...
I'm going to ask you that question, but, yeah, that's quite scary. But, yeah, true.
I said fox.
Hmm. Yeah. What were your reasons?
Independent.
Bushy tail, eats garbage.
Low maintenance.
Yes.
Like, eats crap.
Eats crap. Yeah, only see him at night. Amazing.
Nah, there's genuine reasons, you know.
Interesting.
I've always felt quite a resonance with foxes.
I like when urban foxes.
I cried the other day when I saw an injured fox.
Oh, no.
And I don't
was
cry about
life,
loads of human things,
the...
man. No, in real life.
What was wrong with it?
Oh, it was fucked up.
Oh, really bad,
it's like
yeah.
it's a change of season, so, like, there's loads of, like, pack stuff. Like, some foxes get beaten up and then left for dead, basically.
Oh, nature is so brutal. Like, I saw a fox sleeping the other day. It was lovely. My brother was like, look. And we looked in a hedge and he was in there. And I was like, that's just lovely. But it's nature.
Yeah.
That fox could get hit by a car.
He was dead, no?
No, he was alive. He was sleeping.
If it's in the day, man, honestly, there's more often than not that fox is fucked.
Oh, I thought it was quite cute, but
that's what I thought, and then I saw that it was fucked. Oh, no. I suppose the woman at RSPCA says, she was like, yeah, like 9 times out of 10, if you see a fox in the day, that dude has screwed it.
That's bad.
Yeah, it's not ideal at all.
Deeply upset about that. Oh, well. So you fancy foxes? I like a man who's mostly human.
I wouldn't say fancy foxes. That's, you've jumped there quite a lot.
Yeah, I've got a bit Freudian there, but...
Really? My mum's not a fox, so no, it's not that Freudian.
Thank God.
But, I mean, maybe one of your parents is a monkey.
I hope not. Maybe, like, way back, yeah.
Yeah. It's all started off. We all started off as monkeys, didn't we? So technically, you are just attracted to humans. Exactly. Brilliant. I feel like I've run out of questions, but I'm sure there's other stuff.
What I want to ask you the questions. People know.
Are you an investigative journalist?
No.
And you're trying to get secrets out of me?
I think I'm too lazy. I think because my articles that I write aren't, they're just feelings and opinions.
Advice.
Yeah, advice.
Is exactly. Your advice fluid? Have you contradicted yourself much?
Oh, you think I have? Most of the time, I just encourage people to ask questions of themselves. And I say, look, this is what I would do. This is what I think you need to do. But ask yourself this series of questions and see where you end up.
Yeah.
Rather than being like, you should. Because I get a lot of questions like, should I leave my husband? And I'm like, I'm 26. I absolutely cannot be trusted with
this. That's a deep question.
But I just don't answer. I'm like, maybe.
Imagine
I don't want to ruin someone's life.
Yes.
So mostly I just answer questions from people younger than me. And it's like, oh, why is my boyfriend being like this? I'm like, he's an asshole.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's stuff that I'm like, I know I've been through.
That doesn't sound that empathic.
He's an asshole, but maybe nice asshole.
No, I know.
So it is.
Sometimes you just got to be like, boom, right?
Sometimes you have to be quite hard on people.
Yeah, I get that.
Tough love, but loving tough love.
Do you ever get guys writing and going, my girlfriend's been a nightmare?
Not a lot, which I wish men would write it more because men are in need of that empathy. Shared male experience is often not empathetic and not often gentle in a way that they need.
It's true. More agony uncles, right?
We need agony. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe you could do that.
Yeah.
You need like a fun name. It's like, dear.
What do you mean?
Mine's like, Ask Teddy.
Why Teddy?
My name in the internet is Teddy. It was like a nickname, but I chose it back when like the internet was like more anonymous.
MySpace.
MySpace, yeah. MySpace, Bebo onwards. So now it's Teddy, so that's Ask Teddy.
Teddy?
Yeah, you need like a...
But why Teddy?
Well, I was going to be called Theodora when I was little, so I was going to be a Teddy, and it just seemed like something I could Theodore. Pick quite, and a lot of people call me Teddy as a nickname, so I just... You have to pick something.
Yeah, cool.
What's it called when you have like a... Stage name or something like
pseudonym.
That.
Pseudonym.
Yeah, you have to
Monica.
Exactly. You have to have a moniker.
All right. Well, is there any advice that you would give to anyone listening who this is your opportunity to communicate. A little bit.
I mean, I think the best advice for anyone, I think, is to remember that no feeling is final, that you're not, you arrive at a place where you feel really terrible. You aren't going to be there forever. You've got to consider things as temporary, and it gives you, I think, more scope and more of a ability to deal with it and push through it, knowing that it's not forever. None of it is. I mean,
nothing is forever.
Nothing is forever. Everything dies. Good night. But just that, things. There's ways to change everything. I mean, I remember my mum used to be like, she'd be like, "There's nothing so bad that it can't be fixed," and I'm sure there's holes in that argument, But yeah. For a young, I think it's a nice thing to think of. Like, nothing is ever that serious. There are solutions. There are ways, even if you can't see a way.
I know.
You, the future, will
Sometimes
find a way.
Sometimes it feels like you can't.
Yeah, and just believe blindly in the kind of the power of your own, actions and perseverance. Oh, yeah.
Oh, actually, before we finish this, if you had an hour in the day, a whole hour to take care of your mental well-being, what would you do?
I think I'd swim. Nice. I think I if I live somewhere, I could go to the beach. I love the sea. I love the coast.
More than a swimming pool.
More than a swimming pool, yeah. I think swimming in the sea or just being by the sea does such wonders for
Dreamy.
My... Or reading as well, because I don't make time for that enough.
Yeah, neither do I.
Like, I listen to audiobooks because I've struggled with concentration.
Yeah.
But it's different.
What's the last book you listened to?
So I am listening to Dark Tower series by Stephen King.
Yeah, one they just brought out with Idris Elba.
Yes.
The show.
Well, I haven't watched that yet, though.
Yeah.
Well, I love The Dark Tower.
Really?
It's like sci-fi and western and horror.
Brilliant.
In like, oh, it's
perfect.
Great. Yeah. So I'll listen to that again.
Well, thank you, Beth McCall.
Thank you for having me.
You're a ledge.
Oh, cool. My last, yeah.
Fist bump.
Yeah.
You can have a hug as well.
Oh, right. Oh, no. It's been great. Yeah, thank you for having me.
And you sure there's nothing else you want to say?
No, I think so.
100%.
No, I think
I've definitely not say anything else.
My book?
Yeah. All right.
My book. So,
my books.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Powered by Spirit Studios.